Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on all the biggest NBA news as the biggest names in the game join ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski for the Woj Pod, featuring in-depth conversations, breaking news reaction and analysis, and coverage of the biggest events on the NBA calendar, as well as an occasional deep dive into some of the most notable events in NBA history. The playoffs are here, so be sure to check it out. Also, ESPN Plus gives you live daily coverage of the PGA Championship from the Ocean Course at Kiawah Island this weekend from May 20th through the 23rd. Stream the exclusive main feed each morning, featured groups every day, and more. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/golf. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth in the house, and he has developed a new appreciation for Stevie Wonder thanks to our good friend Spencer Hall.
Man, so I know people, maybe they come here for sports, but I don't think they do on Friday. They know they're going to get a lot of stuff. But like, I grew up knowing that Stevie Wonder was a musical genius. And like, I appreciated Stevie Wonder, but he wasn't popping like that when I was coming up. Like, we was hip hop. Everybody was hard. Everybody was thugs. So like, that's what I was listening to. But like, I always knew Stevie Wonder was good. After listening to you guys Wednesday, you and Spencer talk about Stevie, I decided to go down a rabbit hole. And which first thing I learned was Stevie's name is not Steven, which I didn't know. And then I decided to go listen to all the songs that I like, but one grabbed me and it was As. And I'm listening to this on Apple. They like scroll the lyrics along. So I'm listening to As and reading the lyrics, and I started welling up before I even got to the first chorus. This is the most beautiful ever. And like, I heard it before. Like, it to me felt like after you watch Jordan play, and you're like, oh, there's a higher level that no one's reached before. Stevie has exposed me to love I didn't know that I could find. Like, I wanted to go hug my wife immediately after I got to that first hook. Man.
Like, I feel like As got a second life. Was it the best man that As was in? Yep. Like, I feel like it got a second life there. Because, look, it's not like it was a single, right? Like, it's a dope, dope song on the second disc of a really, really, really long album. And then the best man came around, and then that brought it back. And then, dude, like I say, that man said he could loving you till 8 times 8 times 8 is 4. Loving you until the day we are no more.
I'm telling you, man, if me and my wife are at dinner and Stevie Wonder come up with his instruments and sing that first verse to us, I could say the sexist chauvinist thing is like, yeah, Stevie could take my wife. But I was thinking, actually, I would go on a date with Stevie. If Stevie was like, hey, I'll be loving you always, I'm like, all right. That verse earned him a date. this is beautiful, Bomani Jones. I'm just talking about the right up to the first chorus. As around the sun, the earth knows she revolves, and the rosebud knows to bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure,
yes, you'll know.
You can rest your mind assured that I'll be loving you.
Here's the thing. That's on the same album as Knocks Me Off My Feet. He's got two of them. He's got two of them on the same record. Two of them.
I don't know. You guys did this show already, so I'm sorry to make a double Stevie show.
The people have no problem with it. And then he start hollering at the end, right? Like this is what I wonder if it's Stevie's mind when he gets to the point at the end where he start hollering. Like, wait a minute, was she like not going for it? You know what I'm saying? Like, can you imagine? That's what that last verse is. I don't think you heard what I just said to you. Are you not with it? We all know.
Ooh.
Sometimes it came to trouble. You wish you was born in another time and place.
I grew up on hip hop, like I remember. And I remember like breaking down lyrics in hip hop songs. And then each song would have 2 or 3 lines that I would say to my friends, like, did you hear that? And we break it down. Then you figure it out a month later that it's like triple entendre. This is like way back before the internet and rap genius. And like, it actually took you some effort to figure that out.
Yes.
There is not a line in As that I can read and not Like, I feel like every single line in this is one of those lines where I would be in the car on the way to school with my friends in the backseat while my brother's driving. Like, did you see when he said, until the dolphins flies and the parrot lives in the sea always, it cooks.
Lives in the sea. Like, what? Who's sitting here thinking about that?
He follows that up with, until we dream of life and life becomes a dream, always? And that's not even, that's before you get to eight times eight is four.
Dog, until the earth just for the sun denies itself. Right, until the day the earth starts turning right to left, which, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense, but whatever.
It don't matter. Love don't make sense for Monty Jones.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Dog, I want to do the hollering part just all together because it's the only thing I can do that's even. We all know sometimes life's hates and troubles can make you wish you were born in another time and place. But you can bet your lifetimes that in twice it's double, that God knew exactly where he had wanted you to be placed. So make sure when you say you're in it, but not of it, you're not helping to make this earth a place sometimes called hell. Change your words into truth and then change that truth into love. And maybe our children's grandchildren and their great grandchildren will tell, I'll be loving you. Did you hear me before?
So that is so incredibly beautiful. And maybe, like, Bomani, you're a writer. I am a writer. And I think that also adds to it. The value of it is like knowing how difficult it is to express something so powerfully while also rhyming. It's like that to me is what makes it even more incredible. If anyone is listening to this or if anyone is like not moved and is thinking, I wish they would get to sports, pause the podcast and try to write. Two lines. Just try. Set a timer for 30 minutes. Set it for 30 hours. Smoke. Do whatever you got to do. Have a sip. Tap into whatever creative juices you have. Bro, just sit there and give yourself 30 minutes and try your best to write something as beautiful as any one of these lines. Right. And then you'll come back and be like, oh, my bad. Try to express how much you love someone. Whoever in your life that you love, your dog, I don't care who it is. Try to find a way to express how much you love them that is more powerful than any one of these lines.
And can you also play an instrument, right? Like, that's the thing about the overlap with him and Prince and everything else. It's one thing that you can go out here and write this dope shit, right? Okay, cool. But you also out here playing instruments and doing this at the same time. I am simply not good at that many things. And guys, I think I'm good at a lot.
You and me both, bro. Like, I went to the best business school in the country, and I played in the best football league in the country, and I'm working at the best sports network in the country. Like, I think I am great at a lot of things, but man, I can't do this. If lunchroom table and pencil is not an instrument, I can't play one. I mean, that is the extent of my instrumentality.
Nah, man. Spencer, like, dude, I just sit there. I am just perpetually amazed at how many things Spencer has an encyclopedic knowledge of. Like, he just wind up on the phone with Spencer, like, do you know the story of? Nah, I don't know that one. And then you're like, how do you forget about knowing it in the first place? How do you remember it? Like, how do you do all these things?
That's how I feel talking to you. That's high praise of you to say that about Spencer, because that's how I feel talking to you. Is I can bring up any music genre, any artist, bring up any sport from decades before we were both born, and you'll have something on it.
Oh, yeah, no, I get Spencer on that. Like, I always say, and I mean this, my relationship with Spencer is like what America could be if we could stop tripping.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that is the full-on way that I feel about this. Spencer sitting up here in an undershirt with all the beard and everything, and he's just like, yo, let's get into the keys of the Stevie music, right? Let's talk about all these scientific things that have happened while also wildly enjoy just what we're doing. That's the thing, my problem with sports with all the analytics guys is I'm like, do you actually enjoy what we're watching?
Yeah.
Like, I almost hit it. What's the square root of this apartment? That's how it winds up coming across.
You and I have been doing this long enough that I think sometimes our minds are melding because I started thinking the same thing. I learned all the Excel stuff and all the spreadsheet finance stuff. Like, I can do all that stuff. And when I first started getting into sports, like, I thought it was cool that I could do all this stuff. And it is cool that I can do all that stuff. And I would lead with that with my chest out. Like, you know what? Like, I know all this stuff. I can make my own models. And then I realized people do finance because they want to make money, not because they enjoy it. And I realized that I was not having fun with the sport. And you can see it happening. The Hall of Fame ceremony in basketball was a good example, a good reminder of how diverse the game of basketball used to be.
Yes.
And I'm hesitant to make too much criticism of it because I don't understand basketball as deeply as I understand football. But I know when I turn it on, I'm more bored by today's game, which I know sounds ridiculous because it's so much talent. At the high end, I'm not bored by it, but I'm more bored by the style of play now than I was when I was coming up.
So peep game on that. I don't know if you're familiar with Kurt Goldsberry, but he
does
a lot.
I got his book, Sprawl Ball.
He does great statistical analysis. What he's really good at is putting out like these frequency charts.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like great visual encapsulations of what's going on. A couple days ago, he put out a frequency chart about where made shots were taken in the NBA this year. The only spots on the floor where enough shots were made in order to like be visible on this chart around the 3-point line and from like the bottom of the circle to the rim straight in the middle.
I saw that chart. It was phallic in nature also, which was kind of weird.
It was. Everybody's taking the same shots.
Yeah.
And you know what that means? Time to change the rules.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like anytime you reach a steady state and everybody is doing the same thing, that means it is time to change rules. Like either you're in a Will Chamberlain situation where this one guy is so dominant that we need to widen the lane or whatever it is, or you reach a point where I think basketball had gotten toward the 90s, which was everything get moved toward the steady state of we go put three guys on this side of the floor, one guy in the post, one guy in isolation on the wing, and that's how we're now going to play basketball. And then once everybody played like that and it got boring, we had to shake it up. And this has to be shaken up. Like that LeBron-Steph game that we saw on Wednesday night, right? I did my best to watch, man. I'm old. I was just like, yo, the game was just 4 points and I didn't close my eyes. But obviously I closed my eyes, right? But what that really came down to was, yo, man, these dudes are cold and they doing incredible things to watch and optimizing this for success. I get it, but it's not fun. It's not enjoyable.
The storyline, I think, is part of what's lost there, which is the highlights are as good as ever. Like, I'll watch a highlight show. I'll scroll through Twitter and like and retweet all the beautiful dunks and passes and all that stuff. That's great. But the storyline that you get in football, the give and take, the chess match, so to speak, that you get in football, you used to get in basketball. And the clashing of styles, you used to get in basketball. And again, I'll preface this by saying, maybe I'm just not as smart on basketball as I'm on football, but it doesn't seem like you get that. And football has this one thing. It seems like the only sport that I don't want to call it analytics proof as much as maybe it's been improved by analytics, because baseball is worse to watch because of analytics.
Yes.
Like basketball is worse because of analytics. Like I don't watch enough soccer or enough hockey to get into that. But football, analytics has pushed them in the direction of doing more interesting things. And you can see that because football is so complex, there are many different ways to win. Like there is no optimal way when you have Lamar Jackson having the best offense in the league in 1 year, and then Patrick Mahomes having the best offense in the league 1 year. Like you can see that these many different styles, and then you can have Henry down in the Titans, like they have an effective offense. Like you can see around the league that not everybody is doing the same thing, even though the zone run Shanahan descendant system is the most popular.
Yeah, let me tell you where also I think that football is going to swing around, because what I think is interesting about the Shanahan system is, while everybody is spreading this out, Kyle is kind of spreading it out, but not really. They still coming out here running 21. Nobody's really out here running with two running backs, one tight end, and two wide receivers. Shanahan will come out here and do it. And so I know of one college coach where what his grand master plan is he wants to figure out how to run no huddle, I formation football. Right? Because the idea is now that the linebackers have gotten so small, and now that we have basically moved like the 350-pound defensive tackle out of here, that the next step in the evolution of the game in terms of success is going to be exploiting the fact that these defenses just aren't that big anymore, and then hammering them, but also maintaining the tempo that's required to score enough points in this day and time, right? Like that's the thing about football, because the can you kick my ass factor never goes away in football. And so like once you get to that fundamental place, like that's going to wind up being the change there. And I'm wondering in basketball, if without changing the rules, there's going to be some change that then creates the need or at least the desire for people to diversify the styles that they have. Because you know what basketball needs? When I was a kid, there was room in the NBA for guys who weren't good at basketball. And I understand it sounds counterintuitive that I want some people who aren't good at basketball, but those guys made things fun, right? Like Charles Oakley is not skilled enough to play in the NBA today, but the league was better for having Charles Oakley.
Absolutely. It's shooting too. It's not just not good at basketball. It's like you can't play in this league if you can't shoot. Also, you can't play in this league if you aren't quick laterally. Like I feel like that's on defense. Like you get played off the floor and those guys are exceptional at other things. But this just popped into my head now and it might be a crackpot theory, but it feels to me like part of the reason why football feels like analytics isn't making it less interesting is because in football, you are playing against the opponent.
Yeah.
And these other sports, you have opponents out there, but it feels like you're playing against the game. You know, like you're trying to optimize the rules in your favor. Whereas football is like, no, if we see somebody in the cover four, we're going to try to run the ball. If they're heavy cover two, we're going to try to run the ball. If they have a weak spot here, we're going to attack that. And every opponent is different. In basketball, for some reason, it feels like the opponent obviously matters, but so much of it, and it feels like I'm denigrating the intelligence it requires to play basketball. Like, I understand that there are adjustments made to, like, pick and roll coverages and all that stuff throughout the course of the game, but when you get a three-on-one fast break, they all look the same. People going to the corners, like, they all look the same. When you get a half-court offense in a clutch situation, it's almost always ISO or high pick and roll. Like, it all looks the same. You don't got nobody shooting sky hooks. I hated watching people shoot the sky hooks when I was a kid. I saw Lopez shoot one the other day, and I was like, what in the hell is that? But I would love for somebody to catch it on the block and do that old boring Tim Duncan fundamentals off the glass nonsense. They don't do that.
Dead serious. We have a whole generation that don't know nothing about post moves, right? Like, I'm not even being that guy, right? But even forget about, like, Hakeem Olajuwon. Kevin Garnett had incredible post moves. Tim Duncan had incredible post moves. Joel Embiid, as good as he is, and he is excellent, he ain't really hitting you with them post moves. And there's an art to that, right? And I think maybe that's the thing that, as the NBA has done all these changes to try to give people the game that they thought they wanted, what has been lost is the artistry of it.
Right.
Like, think about this. When's the last time you saw somebody do an up and under layup? Right? Because the game doesn't really allow for that anymore. Like, the nature of what defense is and how you can zone up and everything else. Those things are great, right? Like the George Gervin finger roll from like 8 feet away from the basket and stuff like that. There's no room for things that are just objectively beautiful unless you're like Steph Curry shooting from half court. But we're at that place.
This is the too much of a good thing problem though, because like all the things that we're seeing in the game, I loved when I saw those things in the 90s, in the early 2000s. I love seeing them. Yeah. But like, I got a whole plate of potato salad. Like, I love potato salad.
Yeah.
On a plate with a bunch of other stuff. I was not this guy. I normally am not this guy. But I have to be honest. I'm less interested in the NBA while it is as talented as it has ever been. And I always kind of fall back on like entertainment properties are about stars. Like, I'll turn on a TV show because I know there's going to be a star in it. They're about storylines. They're about protagonists. There's so many great stars with diverse attitudes and images in the NBA. There's so much great talent. But I have to be honest. Maybe it's just because the world of entertainment is more competitive now. Like, I watch less basketball, like regular season basketball, just for pure enjoyment now than I ever have in my life, which seems absurd.
But also there's a level of like what makes this interesting, because you're right, talking about protagonists and like the characters in the story. One, just in terms of pure basketball, we need to bring the mid-range game back. And you know how we can bring the mid-range game back? It's very simple. Bring back the hard foul, right? The same way, and I know why we can't do this in football, just want to be clear, I'm not a sociopath. The same way football is more interesting with Steve Atwater's out there de-cleating people over the middle, basketball is more interesting with the hard foul. Like, I look at Steph, like, when he goes to the basket, and he's good at going to the basket, and he makes them shots. Dog, somebody should have took his head clean off on a couple of those. Steph Curry be in the lane with zero fear. There should be fear about going into the lane.
It's funny because they kind of legislated out those players in football, but the result of that is more guys catching the ball over the middle. We lose, but it like opens up more of the field. In this, it doesn't, I guess. I see your point. Like, why? Because then the mid-range suddenly becomes a whole lot more efficient. Getting to the basket and getting a layup could cost you a concussion. Like, mid-range gets a lot sexier when you can't shoot a three.
I love a 14-footer, right? You know, and we got a whole generation that ain't even got no mid-range game because there's no use for the mid-range game anymore. You know what I mean? Like, we have those. That's one thing that I think that if we had the hard foul, we would bring back a lot of what's going on. Like, I like watching dudes play one-on-one basketball. And I understand that people, like, we did need more ball movement. Like, that was the thing. And it reached a place where you needed more ball movement. And, like, I was watching that game, the game where Tim Duncan hit that crazy shot over Shaq in the playoffs, and then Derek Fisher hit the crazy shot with 0.4 seconds left. The game was 72-71. No, I do not want games, like, at that point, I do not want games that are 72-71. I do not want them. However, I was riveted by that game. I remember how I felt when Derek Fisher hit that shot. I remember me and my homeboy George sitting in my apartment in Durham, and when that shot went down, how loud we screamed because we could not believe that it was at all possible. That's better than games with double the score, right? Like, the idea that objectively people like points. Nah. People like action. You know what I mean? Like, people like, I don't mean conflict in the most like hardcore sense, but people like conflict. People like that clash. I do think that with all these games, we don't get them. Like, that's why these playoffs, I think, are going to be interesting. Because again, watching LeBron and Steph, and LeBron hit that crazy shot at the end or whatever it is. That's what we want, man. Like, when this comes down to the end of the game, we don't want ball movement. We want that guy, and we want that guy, and we want to see them go at it.
Absolutely. The three-rim shot is a classic as a play-in game. Classic because of that moment. So I think you bring up an interesting point about the drawbacks. And I feel like I might be going overboard on how much I missed the old game, because you're right. There were some things about the old game that were terrible, which is why they changed the rules to make it a little better. But finding some middle ground, I feel like, is where we want to end up. And I'm mad at myself about it sometimes too, where it's like, I want to watch these games. The season I watched the most basketball was the first season LeBron was in Miami. I watched every single Miami game from beginning to end. And that was when the league was kind of in this transition.
Right.
And it also was because that storyline was so compelling. A lot of the nation turned on LeBron James. I immediately became a LeBron James fan because I felt like it was unjustified. And I wanted to watch every game, and I wanted him to destroy everybody. And all this while, we see like some diverse styles of play. Like, I know that the Roy Hibbert playoff matchup is one that comes to mind as like one of the times that seems like it's from the 90s. Like, an idea that a relatively unskilled, and you got to be careful how you talk about basketball players now because they will come and get you.
Yes.
A relatively unskilled offensive player like Roy Hibbert could have the impact on a game that he did is something from the olden days.
But what's so wild about Roy Hibbert, I was actually thinking about him a little early. Like, I have a tab up with his stats because I wanted to make sure I got the years right. Roy Hibbert was one of those impactful players in basketball in 2014. He was irrelevant by 2016. And in 2016, Roy Hibbert was all of 29 years old.
That's your prime.
Yeah, like, he mattered a lot. And then the whole game changed. And then suddenly, Roy Hibbert did not matter. Because let me tell you the other thing about those, like, we talk about how the basketball could be awful then. And it could. But ironically, we love all the guys that made the basketball awful.
Right.
We love those dudes that were coming in taking cats out, right? We love those guys that were banging. I don't know if it's because they were relatable, whatever it is, but we've made the basketball quote unquote better, and it's possible that we made the NBA quote unquote worse. I would also make the point too, I wish people hadn't convinced all these boys when they were young that they were going to be stars, because they all turn out to be kind of boring when they talk to the media. Like, they're not all 100% boring, but have you been keeping up with my man, the Ant-Man?
Oh, yeah. I'm in Minnesota?
Yes.
He's incredible.
I love everything about him just because it's like nobody bothered to tell him how he's supposed to act as a star, right? That fool said, and I'm from Houston, so I don't mean fool like he a fool. I mean, hey, fool, you know? Yeah. That fool sat up there in the Zoom playing with his hair like this, talking about,
incredible.
You see my earrings? They dancing. They asked him the other day, like, his exit interview, and they asked him if he had any highlight that he remembered this year, and he was like, oh, I love all my buckets.
I love all my fuck.
When's the last time we had one of these? I'm looking around the league and trying to think of the last time that we had one of these. And I cannot think of it, right? We have molded and manicured these guys for so long. Like, there's so many things about, this is also happening in football with college, but as the game has changed and as they've made it about money all the way down to so many levels, that we've made things boring in a number of ways because of that. Like, I was talking about it with respect to all the college football transfer and in basketball too, when these guys are leaving. I'm like, yeah, because these guys have been going from school to school based on the depth chart since they were 14 years old. They have no concept of loyalty to any of these institutions because they've never stayed at any of these institutions long enough. They are all just places to serve them. I don't blame the players necessarily for doing it, but it ain't better for the larger product. Like, we can all acknowledge that.
You would think that the social media age and all that would encourage like more personality. Like, we would see more individuality, more uniqueness, because they would recognize the value in it. And coming off of the Jordan era, like, everyone was like, oh, you got to be like Mike. You got to be Mr. Corporate, don't say anything wrong, and be the picture of perfection. But it seems like we're in like an anti-hero phase where like it would seem attractive and marketable to not be that guy. And LeBron has taken that role. Steph has that role where they kind of do no wrong in the public eye. You would think that these guys would recognize the marketing potential of like not being that. But the problem is they all think that they're that, I guess. They all like, man, I'm going to be like LeBron.
Some of y'all are not going to be famous. So if you're not going to be famous, be fun. Like, I was thinking about this. And also, it doesn't help that these guys are like so much more sophisticated now as they come up, so we don't get stories like this. So do you know Mike Wise?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know Mike. Yeah, Mike's undefeated. Mike told a story about the year the All-Star game was in Cleveland. He told it on my radio show, and it was just really this amazing NBA-level story. So the All-Star game was in Cleveland, and Mike had covered the Knicks for years, and Charles Oakley is from Cleveland. And so he says Charles Oakley invited him and Frankie Ice to come to his house, like his people's house, in Cleveland. And I think a limousine was involved, right? I can't remember if Frank and Mike drove there themselves or an Oak came by himself in the limousine. But either way, it's Oak in a limousine in a purple suit, because Oak from Cleveland,
yeah,
right? In a purple suit. And he brings him to the house. And of course, you know, the way Mike put it was like, we get there like, hey, white sports writers. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they show up at Oak's house. And he says he gets in there and the sweet potato pie was excellent and everything else. And like, I envisioned this house with plastic on the furniture and everything else. But Mike was just like, how touched he was that Oak wanted to share this part of his life with these guys that he's seen all the time. You know, whenever guys, the All-Star game is in their city where they're from, they all of a sudden now become the king and they want to show everybody all this stuff. But I just remember hearing that story and the personality involved in all of it, right? We ain't going to see that now. Those kind of stories, part of it is because media doesn't get access in that same way. And I'm not being the guy complaining about that. But, you know, that's just something that gets brought up. And so we get to the playoffs now and you got teams that you like best or whatever. Like, as much as I talk that smack about Kyrie, I do appreciate that he exists, because we ain't had a dude like this in a while.
Love him. I mean, somebody that you can have a feeling about. Most of the guys, like, you can't have a feeling about him. And I love Ant-Man because I know, I remember back to that dunk that people were critical of. Like, I know that there are some people who don't like that, and that gives me reason to care, you know?
Yes.
And the same thing with Kyrie is, like, I know that people are going to be on one side or the other with Kyrie because the stuff that he's saying is not gray. Like, it's not something that you can, it's not a warm bath. Like, that thing is ice cold or scorching hot. You're going to be either the one who likes the cold tub or the hot tub. Like, this is not, you have to have a feeling, and it makes it interesting. You brought up Oakley's name a couple times, and I can't hear Oakley without thinking about my 10-year-old daughter, which is a weird thing to think of. So she is more athletic than most of the kids in her class or in her age. And when she plays sports, but she is like a first child and she's very much a pleaser and she's a sweetheart and she's kind. And whenever she plays sports, I remember we playing basketball and whenever she knocks a girl down or something like that, she'll stop and like try to help them up and be like super apologetic. And like, I'm not a sports dad who's like yelling on the sideline. I make a point because I know I'm the only athlete over there. And most of the time, one of very few black parents there. So like, I'm silent the whole game. I'll say, good job, girls. Something like that. Once or twice. But that bothers me more than anything. She was 8 2 years ago at a basketball game. She fouled a girl and the girl's glasses broke and her face started bleeding and her nose started bleeding. That happens because 8-year-olds are uncoordinated. And so my daughter's like so effusively apologetic, like mid-game. And then after the game, she's like sad. I showed her video of Charles Oakley and was like, look, you're Oak Dog, and started glorifying it. Like, I'm so proud of you. I love it. And now when she plays soccer, it's like, Daddy, I'm going to play like Oakley today. She don't know who Charles Oakley is. But she knows that I don't care if you score no goals. I don't care. Like, don't go out there trying to hurt people so you're not quite Oak Dog, because he would go out there and try to hurt people. But, like, don't feel bad for doing your best. Don't feel bad because somebody fell down. Like, after the game, you can tap the girl and, like, my bad after the whistle is blown. But, like, you don't have to be great. You don't have to score no goals. Like, I'm not that dad. But what I do want is, like, effort. And don't be apologetic, especially for young girls. And this is a whole nother.
Yeah, you teach her. That's a life lesson.
Yeah, like, look, no, you don't need to be backing down and bust their ass if you got to bust their ass and say sorry later.
Now, the NBA does not have villains. Like, that's the thing. There's room for villains. This is made better by villains. Like, Bob Ryan used to make this point about referees, where people are like, nobody paid to see the referee. No, but the referee is part of the show. Like, for example, Bob Ryan loves Joey Crawford, because he misses the days where the refs had personality, right? Like, Teddy Valentine in college basketball is like the only one that's really there, like, in terms of just having personality. It's okay to do that. And I think in a lot of ways, especially with the NBA, whether they realize they're doing it or not, you know, college football and basketball did this because they always so worried about the white folks. You know what I'm saying? They're like, okay, let's get the personality out of this. We're going to make it where you don't even think about, like, who these guys are. You can just come out here and you can enjoy basketball. The white folks enjoy disliking the ones of us that they dislike. You know what I'm saying? That's part of the program. They might not do it for the healthiest reasons, but everybody wants to have somebody out there to dislike.
I told you the year of basketball I watched the most basketball was that LeBron year. That was about race. In my view, a black man showing agency in a way that black man hadn't before. Maybe the way that he exited was not perfect, but the vitriol that he received from people who weren't even fans was ridiculous. And, like, I liked LeBron before then. I rooted for LeBron before then. But that season, I was a real, like, I hadn't been a real sports fan because, like, sports was professional for me from the time I was about 16 when I was like, all right, we got to get a scholarship. So it, like, sucked a lot of the fanhood out of sport. That was the only time that I felt like I touched, like, the fan moment, because, like, I was passionate about America's villain, felt like my hero for that one season.
Now, tell me this, as you know, we think about this and we coming, you know, toward the end of our time. Don't you wish that we got the 2021 Kwame Brown when he was in the league? He would have been a phenomenon. He would have been a sensation. They just kept calling Kwame Brown a bust, and he just came out here with hard fouls and post-game interviews. Like, yeah. I don't know if you saw this one I just saw when you was talking about Matt Barnes. You ever tried to whoop somebody as big as me?
Matt Barnes, like, the Kwame Brown retort got my attention before the All the Smoke podcast. So when I heard Kwame going after all of them, I was like, damn, they must have went in on Kwame. Then I went back and listened and watched their show where they talked about him. This was about something else. This wasn't about them.
But it is about them, though, specifically Matt Barnes, because his attacks on Matt Barnes are so pointed. It also tells me, and I don't know that much about how Matt Barnes came up, right? But it does seem to me that Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson came up and it's a little different. And this is why I say that. Steven Jackson said something like one time and they kept it moving. Matt Barnes keep getting in these back and forths with Kwame and you can't win. Like, he had the one where he got on and invited him to come on All the Smoke and Kwame Brown come back up here sounding like Dennis the Menace. Talking about you, I know you're hurt. I know you hurt. You the one that hurt. There's no winning against Kwame Brown at this
point whatsoever.
There is none. He said, you're in that video, got activated in your hair, trying to make sure that you look good. Light-skinned dudes supposed to be like Drake. You supposed to be taking dudes, girls. He also, this was maybe the funniest. And by the time you guys hear this, Kwame Brown is going to put out like 8 more videos, right? But he said that dude jumped the gate at a house that he paid for, said your product got the key in your pocket, but you were so into it that you jumped the gate. Oh, my chest.
I mean, to talk about writing at the beginning of this show and Stevie's great writing, like, is Kwame coming off the dome with these?
Because they're great.
This is quality comedic writing. Like, I feel like he has a career in that. He also has a career in reputational management. Because, like, he managed to flip the entire script on himself in a matter of a couple of hours.
Yes.
Because from now on, when you hear Kwame Brown's name, you're not going to think what we thought before. It's like first round bus. No, now on, when you hear Kwame Brown's name, that dude who ain't for your nonsense, like, that is his new reputation from this point forward.
But what's also interesting is he is very clearly and explicitly offering up some right-wing politics here.
Yeah.
But when he's doing it while also offering some concise, undeniably true points. Right? Like when he brought it at Jamel, he was just wrong on that, right? He ain't know what she was talking about. And then he went some places. I'm like, nah, I ain't really here for you on that one. But just about everything he said about Matt Barnes, like when you get to the crux of it, it's like, yeah, dog, I kind of see what you're saying. He also is the kind of country that don't like light-skinned folk. He called Matt Barnes a lying little. Let me tell you something. Jeez. Every single person I know who uses that M word that I just put out there, they all have one thing in common. They're dead. Not because somebody shot them, but because they lived to be 85 and there was nowhere left to go. Like, what is going on here? But like every time he says something, I'm like, yeah, I kind of see where you're coming from here.
Dude, it's masterful. Like it's not politically correct at all, but like the content of it. I'm telling you, that's why it feels like he's a writer or he got writers.
Yes.
Because this stuff off the dome, it's like if Stevie freestyled ass. Like, that is Kwame Brown on the microphone freestyling ass on a regular basis.
Well, this is what people need to understand about Kwame. Because one, I just don't think people understand country folk. Like, if you know country black folk in particular, he fits an archetype that I am very familiar with, right? Like, all the colorism stuff that's in there and, you know, like, all that. I'm like, okay, I see what this is. But what you got to understand about Kwame Brown. Kwame Brown made $63 million in his NBA career. And you know what he did when his NBA career was over? He moved back to South Georgia. You know what that means? I assure you that that house and that lot that it's on is paid for. Promise you.
He didn't move back to South Georgia. He never left. That's what that tells me. Like, South Georgia followed him everywhere he went.
Yes.
And he was like, every offseason, I'm going, some people live in the city that they play. Nope. I guarantee you, every offseason, he was back home. Every time he got a minute, he was back home and he took South Georgia with him.
And I'm telling you, though, this is what people got to understand. Once a country dude got his land and it's paid for and he's got the money, he has literally not a care in the world.
Yeah, not one. Good. What you going to do to me? You think Kwame's scared of getting canceled? You think Kwame can't live without Instagram? Come on. Kwame gonna tell you exactly what he think at every moment. Cause what you gonna do? He just gonna go back. I don't know. Does he hunt? I mean, that was a dumb question. Obviously. He does. He has no need for a grocery store. As long as he can get electricity, I'm sure Kwame can feed himself on his enormous lot. Cause $60 million anywhere in the country is nice. $60 million. In South Georgia, he good.
He took care of his bricks. That's another thing about this new NBA, though, that we don't talk enough about. And I know we got to wrap this up soon. We ain't had no stories about them dudes going broke in quite a long time.
Yeah, that's an old phenomenon.
Yeah. These cats, like, nah. That's the one thing about them being molded since childhood, right? is like, no, the people who want your money are not allowing you to blow it before they can get some. And they would like to get that money for quite a long time. They would like to get that money consistently. So you're right, though. I had given Kwame Brown a single thought for all these years. And let me tell you where I think he actually gets a bad rap. Yes, Kwame Brown was a bust, right? You know, and I get his point. Nobody's a bust in the NBA. Okay, relative to the expectations of the number one pick, he was disappointing. He averaged like 6 points a game for his career. All that. Have you ever looked at that draft? Whoever went number one, unless it was Pau Gasol, was going to be seen as a bust. That draft was awful. Awful, I tell you. Like, the best players in that draft were Pau Gasol, Tony Parker, Joe Johnson, and Gilbert Arenas. And there is a steep drop-off after that. Steep! Like, that's like Jason Richardson, Shane Battier's in that draft, Rodney White's in that draft.
Tyson Chandler,
yeah, but... I mean, it took a while for that. If Tyson Chandler had gone number one, we would talk about Tyson Chandler like we talk about Kwame Brown.
That's fair. Eddie Curry, Shane Battier, yeah.
Yeah, like, there was nobody in that draft to take. Mm-hmm. He just happened to be the unlucky one to go first.
Yeah.
And then he wound up on that team with the Lakers where it was Kobe and Bums, which then just by definition makes him a bum. And then the Lakers started getting good. We might have started thought about him a little different. Then he got sent to Memphis in that trade.
Situation and expectations always matter more than we give credit for. Because, like, he wasn't a bad NBA player.
No.
He was a disappointing player for where he was drafted, obviously, but he was a fine NBA player. He played a couple years in college, or if he came straight out and went 15, like,
yeah,
people would have been like, oh, nice career. Like, he was better than a lot of the guys he got drafted in front of. So, like, that's what you need to do.
It was two things. One, Jordan took him, and then Jordan played with him, and you know all the problems that came with that. But the other thing that's easy to forget is that Kwame Brown was the first high school player to be drafted number one overall. There were only three high school players ever drafted number one overall. Kwame Brown, LeBron James, and Dwight Howard. Those are the only three that ever went number one overall. And he was the first one, and he went because there wasn't nobody else to take in that draft. And he has had enough of these people and what he brought it. Like I say, Charlamagne Tha God and DJ Envy, they had to go get it. He brought it to Angela Yee too. He the only person that's ever made me laugh calling somebody a beta male. Like, that's the thing. I'll be like, yo, you got me out here laughing at stuff that's kind of counter to what I believe. Like, what I'm about. Why is this so funny? Why are you so good at this?
It's the accent, the tone. But in this climate, I think he is also one of these guys who's making the comedians and podcast hosts and celebrities who are complaining about overwokeness, he's making them look dumb. Because clearly, he's managed to pull this all off. He's doing all the things that you said, we can't do no more. He's doing it, and people keep coming back to watch. It's just a higher degree of difficulty, and he's managed to thread that needle all this time. His best talent was not in playing basketball. His best talent was in comedy writing.
I would watch an HBO special that's Kwame Brown, not with no rehearsed routine, just Kwame Brown in front of an audience, and I would pay the audience to individually heckle him. So that he could just go one by one and have something to say. Now, he keep calling Matt Barnes little boy. He is like 4 years younger than Matt Barnes. Little boy, I told you. Matt Barnes is like, yo, come to Atlanta. Dog, Brunswick ain't nowhere near no Atlanta. Like, I don't know if he lives in Brunswick, but I know that Brunswick, where he went to high school, is 4.5 hours away from Atlanta. Matt Barnes is like, yo, we'll do a show in Atlanta. Come to Atlanta. Dog, you got to get you a map. Y'all trying to go to Jacksonville? Like, you might be able to get him to go down there. Y'all don't understand the country. Like, Steve, I think Steve understands the level of country we dealing with. Dog, Matt Barnes, you got to let this go. This is a fight that you have no chance at winning. You are not prepared for this at all because you're not really mad at him. For whatever reason, not only is he furious with you, he knows your spots.
Maybe he has some history with Matt Barnes that we're unaware of, or maybe Matt Barnes has the best material for him to go after. But again, if you watch that tape, Matt Barnes, like, none of them are really going after him. And Matt Barnes doesn't do anything at all. Like, Matt Barnes is kind of this there. He just happened to be there. And Kwame was spraying wildly at first, but now he's zeroed in on one man. And it's uncomfortable. I like Matt, too.
Kwame Brown, 38 years old, and call him Dennis the Menace. Like, that's the thing. His references are not for the youth. Right? His references are for us and Alda. He said he had activator in his hair. Because again, colorism is a big part of this. Kwame decided he did not come this far in life to be taking no smack from nobody biracial.
Yep.
Right? I'm not saying that's how he should see the world. I am telling you that seems to be clear.
Yeah.
That is how he sees it.
Gilbert was like, we good right off the bat.
Yeah.
Stephen A., also very wise. We good, man. You right. Defend yourself. You're a good man. Moving on.
Dog, Stephen A. has brought it back to active NBA superstars, right?
Oh,
tell Kevin Durant, I am not a man you want as an enemy. He told Kwame Brown, yo, we have been hard on him.
Stephen A. was right. It was a good strategic decision. It also was a fair thing to do. It's a smart man. No matter what you believe about him yelling on TV, the man seems to know how to make the right moves, at least in this situation.
Well, were you there? You remember the infamous Temecula night on Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said something about it in a tweet, and Temecula dude came back at me, and I immediately turned into Ronaldo Ray. You want some old man?
No,
I don't want any of this. I am simply observing and I find it to be funny. I got no qualm with whatever it is you out here talking about. I don't want that. That's what Gilbert Arenas said. Gilbert, one thing about Gilbert, Gilbert ain't really got nothing to prove. He does all this stuff because he's just a weird sociopath when it comes to this, but he has nothing to prove. What I feel like Kwame identified is he feel like Matt Barr is somebody that got something to prove. And that's why he just twisted at him. Twisted at him.
Pride and ego getting in the way. Because the obvious move is just be like, you right, Kwame. We ain't mean no harm. I didn't consider how this must make you feel. My bad. I'll be more conscious going forward. And that's like, not only is that the right strategic thing to do, that's also like probably the right thing to do. It's like, yes. And again, I don't think they roasted him too bad, but if you hurt somebody's feelings, like that's what I would do. If I don't know, clowning somebody on here, some athlete or something, not that I can think of a time that we did it, but when that happens, if somebody takes offense, even if I don't think it's that big a deal, somebody takes offense and they come for me, I'm not going to bow up. Like, what? I'm going to fight you over a joke I made on a podcast? I'm an adult with 3 children. I'm sorry, bro. I ain't mean no harm. Moving on along.
Yes. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. That's Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth. Check him out at theundefeated.com. Gabe Bassain, Tony Colatiude. And we got our man Dave Presley now handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.
Listen to ass and read the lyrics.
Yes. Get swept up.
Don't be afraid to cry.
While you sit on the toilet.
My wife just walked in. About to sing it to her.
There you go.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time.
With Bomani Jones.